Hi, this is Randall Schwartz, host of Floss Weekly. This week, Joe Brockmeyer joins me. We're going to talk about Typo3, a content management system that scales to huge websites. You're not going to want to miss this, so stay tuned.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for Floss Weekly is provided by CashFly at CACHEFLY.com.
This is Floss Weekly with Randall Schwartz and Joe Brockmeyer. Episode 287, recorded March 12, 2014. Typo 3. It's time for Floss Weekly, the show about free, Libre, open-source software. I am your host, Randall Schwartz, Merlin at Stonehenge.com, bringing you each week, as often as I can anyway at least, the movers, the shakers, the big projects, the small projects, the projects you might not have ever heard of, the projects you may be using every day and not even realizing it. Today's show is no exception to that, but before we talk about the show, let's also bring on our co-host. You've known him from a couple of shows before. He's our first-time co-host for this show, though. Joe Brockmeyer, also known as Zonker. Welcome back to the show.
Thank you. I'm really excited to be on.
Yeah, so you wrote me about a month ago and said, hey, you know what, you ever looking for more co-hosts? And I said, well, occasionally, because sometimes we get a little bit of a shortage, and I appreciate you coming on. So welcome back to the show.
Thank you. Yeah, it's been a longtime fan. I'm looking forward to actually being part of the show as opposed to just I like asking the questions as opposed to being asked the questions, really.
Very good. And I understand you have actually a bit of radio background.
Yeah. Way back in the day. So I grew up on, 70s and 80s TV. So I wanted to be, Dr. Johnny Fever when I grew up. Mm-hmm. So I had a chance in college to actually work at a classic rock radio station. So instead of flipping burgers to pay for college, I actually got to flip discs and did the midnight to six shift most times.
Yes, not the prime time at all, but definitely got you on the air. That's pretty cool. And when you came on last, we actually were talking about OpenSUSE. Are you still with the OpenSUSE project?
No. So since then, it's been a while. Went back to freelancing. I'm now a recovering tech journalist. And I work for, these days, I work for Red Hat on the open source and standards team and get to work with the projects, the upstream projects like Fedora and CentOS and RDO and basically the stuff that, we work with in the hopes that, it will refine into the commercial supported products that they do.
Cool. And I'm sure you'll make a great co-host, and we'll have you back on as often as you can make it as well. But the show is not about you and me. Oh, wait, where are we speaking to you from? Where are you speaking to us from? I even got it backwards. What do you know?
I'm in St. Louis. That's where I am when I'm not traveling. So, yeah.
Home of the giant Gateway Arch, right?
Home of the Arch, the City Museum, the St. Louis Cardinals, and St. Louis-style pizza and gooey butter cake.
And the first time I went to the museum there about the Arch Museum, it said the end of the Oregon Trail. And I said, no, the end of the Oregon Trail is Seaside, Oregon. That's the end. That's where it finishes. It is not. That's the beginning of the Oregon Trail. That's the other end.
It's a minor detail.
I was offended by that, though, being Oregonian. So, and I'm currently at the ZipRecruiter office in Santa Monica, California, where it's beautiful sunny today. So that's probably enough about us. Well, we should probably introduce the show. So we have on Typo3. The project is Typo3. It's a content management system. Christian Mueller is going to be representing that, and we'll bring him on in a few minutes. But it's basically a content management system. So you interface with a website, and you upload your content, and you lay it out in different ways, and people can access it. What do you know about this so far, there, Joe?
Basically, what I've read on the website, I've never really had a chance to work with it. Most of my experience has been with either WordPress or Drupal, and static stuff lately, like Middleman or was real popular for a little while. It's not Django. I can't remember the name of it right now. I was using it. There's so many.
There are many content management systems. So I know one of the questions I definitely have is going to be like, how do we distinguish this from all the rest of them? But without further ado, since we don't need to speculate anymore, let's go ahead and bring on our guest, Christian Mueller. Welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Hi, and where are you speaking to us from?
I'm in the birthplace of Beethoven, actually, in Bonn in Germany.
Very cool. Very cool. Well, through the magic of Skype, you're here with us talking to us about Typo 3. Why don't you give us the 30,000-foot view? What is Typo 3 and what problem is it solving?
Well, Typo 3 is, as you already introduced, an open source content management system, and there are lots around the block, that's true. But Typo 3 is a pretty old project by now, so we are around for a long, long time, and we have a big community over here in Europe, and so lots of stuff is going on in Typo 3. I would say it's not for the small website. That's something where WordPress is perfectly fine for. We are more aiming for bigger websites, and so the reference projects you can find around the web are also really bigger companies. One of the recent ones is Sony America that moved to Typo 3. It's not that small. And it's fairly complicated to learn in the beginning, but that it makes up with the with the flexibility it has. Typo 3, sorry, yeah?
Yeah, go ahead, sorry.
Typo 3 at this point in time is no longer just one project with one content management system. If you move to the website, you will all see the Typo 3 CMS that we talk about now. But Typo 3 by now has also two other projects, spin-offs, so to say. We started to develop a new content management system from scratch because the code base is growing old by now. Typo 3 has started in around 2000, so it's 14 years old in parts. Mm. And so based on that, we created a new PHP framework and also a new content management system based on that framework. So actually we have three products right now in the Typo 3 universe.
And so what's the three from in the Typo 3? I was sort of curious about that right away. What's that about?
Yeah, well, that is kind of, I mean, the founder of the project, Kasper Skarhøy, he coined the name very early in the project. And as far as legend goes, I don't know it exactly, but the typo came actually from making a typo that put him back about half a year of work, because he deleted stuff from the code repositories early on, and the version that was first released as open source was version 3, so it somehow came together as Typo 3, which is actually not a perfect name in an English speaking world, let's say.
Yeah, and how did you get involved?
I personally, mm-hmm. I already found Typo 3 as a student. I needed a CMS for a fairly complex website for an event I made with some friends. We had some ideas. It needed to be multi-language and have some additional functionality. So static website didn't cut it, and it was the year 2002. So at that point in time, not too many CMSs were around. And I checked them. I checked Drupal. I checked Typo 3. And for my taste, the concepts of Typo 3 made more sense to me. So I started using Typo 3 and somehow found myself being a Typo 3 freelancer after my studies. And at some point, I wanted to contribute because it's open source. And I really like to contribute to open source if I can. And I got more and more involved. And by now, I'm a regular contributor and one of the main contact persons for the Typo 3 Flow and Neos projects, which are the new framework and the new CMS.
So are you architecting that, or are you just coordinating for that?
Both, actually. I mean, we have a small team of people architecting this new system, and I mean, they are both released. The framework is released since about 2 years, and the CMS is released in December. So we are now in the process of getting a 1.2 version out and pushing everything forward. But I am mostly involved these days with organizing new contributors. I do the Google Summer of Code administration for Typo 3 this year. And I'm involved a bit with community management in the Title III community. So that's my work, basically, for this project.
So as you said a moment ago, there's a lot of content management systems out there now. How would you distinguish Typo3 from the other systems? Why would I choose Typo3 instead of, say, Drupal?
Okay, Drupal versus Typo3 is probably the difficult question, and I guess it very much depends on the project. I mean, if you know one system already, then you probably can choose it for every project you have. For me, Typo3 had a concept of pages, which, I mean, Drupal has its taxonomies, and you can create something like a page structure with that. But Typo3 was really made for creating page trees and page structures, sitemaps, and it fits very well complex websites with lots of structures and substructures.
Okay, so my basic interaction with Typo3 would be first, you know, probably installing it, and there's probably, I'm guessing there's packages for all the modern Linux distributions and things like that. But then what am I looking at? Am I looking at like a management screen? Am I looking at a place that has upload here, that sort of thing? I mean, what's the interaction going to be like?
Yeah, so the Typo3 CMS has a typical backend interface. You have different modules, like the content module, which is the main part where you edit the website's content. And for the administrators, you have stuff like the templating system, where you change the actual layout of the website, and a few more default modules, like reporting about the system, integrity stuff, extension management to install additional functionality, translation handling, stuff like that. So it covers a lot of stuff in the backend. It's totally separated backend frontend work in Typo3 CMS. In Typo3 Neos, we have a very different approach to that.
And so I'd install my plugins, and you said templating. Is there a standard templating language for PHP, or is PHP the templating language itself, or is there something built on top of that?
No, we have built something on top of that. We wanted to separate templating from PHP. And the predominant templating engine right now, of course, in 14 years, you develop more than one templating language and you evolve it. Mm-hmm. But the current, let's say, thing you should use is the Fluid templating language, which we developed also for the new CMS. So at that point, you can transfer knowledge. If you know the Fluid templating language from the old Typo3 CMS, you can also use it in Typo3 Neos later on. And it's an XML-based templating language, so especially made for doing HTML templating. We just introduce additional tags to HTML that have functionality, like a for each tag that can go over a collection of things like menu items or content elements or stuff like that. So that's the basic templating language. It can do a lot of more things, and it is extensible. You can add your own functionality, but we made sure that basically our IDE can look at it and understand it as XML structure, as HTML, static HTML is as well.
Good. So I had a couple of questions too. These days, sure. The CMS that I'm using actually for primarily is actually a static generator called Middleman that we use for the community website at Red Hat. But I'm curious, like, is there a specific type of site that Typo would be best for? For example, you mentioned larger sites, and then you talked a little bit about pages. Is it most adept for things where the content isn't going to be changing a great deal? Is it good for example, companies that are running, you know, like a publication? Would it be suited for something like, say, ZDNet or, you know, one of those sites? Or is it better for like a corporate website like Red Hat where, you know, once the content is up, it's not going to be, you know, coming at it like a fire hose or being changed a lot?
Actually, from my experience, it's best suited for the company type website or university websites. Actually, quite some universities use Type 3 because you can create very, very big structures and still have them manageable. And I guess one or the two main strengths of Type 3 are the multi-language system. You can work with lots of languages, see them side by side, translate them, fall back to other languages. And the second one is the user rights management. So you can restrict the users perfectly to just a very minor part of the full structure of the page. That makes it good for bigger companies that have lots of sub companies and substructures and different editors for all these information.
So you have a pretty strong ACL system for pages that people, you know, so I can say marketing, you can work with these pages, but not with the engineering pages or something like that.
Exactly. It's not even only about the pages. You can restrict the creation, editing, deletion of pages. You can restrict to certain content elements and also restrict the type of fields to edit. So someone could only edit the text of the website, and someone else could decide if it's hidden or not hidden, and so on. So you can really separate responsibilities there.
Okay. Does it have any sense of like a workflow? So like, for example, if you have a system of approvers or something like that, if I put in content and then a manager or editor has to approve it before it goes live, does it have something like that?
Yes, absolutely. It has the so-called workspaces system. So you can create workspaces as much as you want. You can layer them basically and really create workflows like, okay, you can edit only this workspace and then someone else has to approve it and maybe can move it to another workspace. There another one can approve it and then move it to the live workspace. So you can chain this kind of workflow as you like it.
Okay. Switching up the questions a little bit, I was kind of curious about the licensing. So you, WordPress and Drupal, if I'm not mistaken, or GPLv2, a lot of the newer systems are actually under, Apache type licenses or MIT, much more permissive licenses. I see Typo has gone with GPLv3 or later for Neos and for Flow. Did you have any input in that decision? Do you have any, thoughts on that?
Actually, I had no influence or no say in that regard. My own contributions, I mean, if I do extensions or plugins, I usually do something like MIT license, but I don't know how Type 3 came to the GPL and why we are sticking to it. I would be open to changing it. I think for Type 3 CMS, the big problem is that we never had something of a contributors agreement. So actually changing the license would be a nightmare with the amount of contributors we had. For Flow and Neos, we have such a contribution agreement. So people that want to contribute to one of the newer products have to sign the agreement, so we could switch the license at some later point if we see that it makes sense.
CLAs are, or at least they were a couple of years ago, a pretty hot topic. Do I give away a lot of rights when I sign the CLA, or is it strictly for the project? Like, do you guarantee it'll always be relicensed under a free license, or could the company behind it change it to something proprietary?
Well, that's an interesting point, because Type 3 is one of the projects that has no company behind it. We have an association which has in its bylaws that it has to release software as open source. And obviously there is some money involved in the association from companies, but there is no company directly behind Type 3 and no single company influencing Type 3 or the decisions. So there is absolutely no way to make it closed source. And also the CGL doesn't state or clearly state that you cannot use a non-open license if the license is changed. Apart from that, there is nothing in it that you have to give away. I mean, it's really about we accept your contribution, and we might relicense in a different open source license if we think it makes sense. And we basically, or you basically say that you didn't infringe any copyright rights with your contribution.
Okay, so is this primarily, you know, for the people who are doing it, or you know, is anybody drawing a paycheck to work on this, or is this pretty much everybody working on it is doing it because they love it?
Yes, I mean, the association did some funding for the head start of the new products, because obviously in the beginning no one can make money out of a new software product which is still in alpha or beta. For Tibble 3 CMS, usually the contributors are companies that use Tibble 3 for their customers, so the contribution base is pretty good. For Flow and Neos, as I said in the beginning, the association funded some of the development. By now, it's no longer funded in a bigger way. We still get funding, or basically all of the three projects get funding for stuff like code sprints, meetings to develop together, hackathons, stuff like that. But actually, coding time is not financed and is all voluntary by now.
Okay. One question I have, I always have when projects do, you know, kind of a respin or a next generation product, is how easy is it going to be to forklift my site from the original Tibble 3 to Neo? Or is that something you would recommend? How long is Neo, or how long is the original going to be maintained?
We have a policy to say that the Tibble 3 CMS is not seeing an end of life. I mean, there's no official date to end the life of Tibble 3 CMS. And it's also not meant as a replacement. Tibble 3 Neos is really a different kind of CMS. It's more suited for the changing kind of website, as you mentioned, the news website and stuff like that. The concepts are different. And for now, it's also a bit of a smaller system. I mean, Tibble 3 CMS is around for a long time. It has lots of features, and there are lots of extensions available from other people. This is things that Neos won't have in the near future. So there is no end-of-life date. And on the contrary, Tibble 3 CMS is seeing the 6.2 version coming out in, I think, 2 weeks. And it's a long-term support version, which we started 3 years ago. So it will be supported for the next 3 years. And there are already plans for versions after that. So Tibble 3 CMS is not dying in the near future, at least.
So is Neo really kind of an answer to WordPress? I mean, is that you know, kind of the audience that you're going after there?
I think you could use it for smaller websites and blogs perfectly fine, but we are not aiming for that audience, because we build it on top of a framework which is made for bigger applications, web applications. So the whole system is more suited for really bigger applications. The CMS right now is more like a toolbox. I mean, you can build your own CMS out of it. It is a CMS in its own right. You can install it and use it for blogging, for websites. But the main idea right now is to use the framework to build your web application and add some content management features with the CMS we provide. So it's also really for bigger websites, and there are already websites online with Neos which are really news and article-based websites.
Okay. How is the asset management, things like one of the things I struggled with early when I was using WordPress was its asset management, things like images and whatnot that you would put in, video snippets and things like that, wasn't very good. How is there... you know, how is the asset management in Tibble 3, either Neo or the original?
Yeah, I mean, in both, we learned over the years. In the beginning, Tableau 3's asset management was like non-existing. I mean, when Tableau 3 started years ago, basically every asset you uploaded was copied into one folder, and if the asset was already there, it was renamed to a new name. So you had lots and lots of copies if you used the same asset again and again, which was obviously a pretty bad way. I mean, it worked. You never could lose an asset because this directory was not basically manageable from the backend. You had to manually go in and delete stuff if you wanted to. So it was secure. It worked pretty well. No editor could break the website by deleting something. But of course, it was not really management in that way. By now, both systems are pretty similar. We scan directories, we index files in there. We have a web database index of all the files, and you can add metadata to the files. And obviously, if you have a database index, you can store a file just once on the file system, because regardless how many times you use it, you can link from the database to it.
Okay.
So it evolved a lot.
Okay.
It evolved a lot over the years.
All right. So here's the hardball segment of the show, because this is one of the questions I think is on a lot of people's mind, especially right now. WordPress and PHP applications in general have been dinged for their security bugs, for their security vulnerabilities over the years. I know that as a WordPress user, I'm always kind of watching to see, do I need to update WordPress today? Because it probably has a security fix. How is the security history for Typo, and you know, any, like, what's my update cycle? Do I need to be watching for security fixes often with that?
Yes, of course. I mean, we have, I guess every web-based tool is somehow a problem for security, so you have to update it from time to time. Tableau 3 is no exception, obviously. In my time, which ranges back to like 2002, I can remember one major security issue. Obviously, there are lots of smaller issues, but most of them are issues that depend on having access to the backend. So of course, if you have a backend user, you have elevated rights to the system, and then it's much easier to have a security breach. But for the front-end system, there was no bigger security issue for a long time right now. And we have a dedicated security team that takes care of checking security issues and disclosing them and providing security fixes. We have, I would say, a new release, which is not always a security release, sometimes just a bug fix release, every maybe 4 weeks, I would say. And for Flow and Neos, we are actually very happy that we had a security check from a bank in the Netherlands last year, which wanted to use the system, and they did a full security scan and said it was safe for their use. So we are pretty happy and right now think that it's a pretty safe system.
Wow, that's a full security team. Well, you know, given that it's PHP, it's probably appropriate. But sorry, I had a little jab in there somewhere.
No, it's...
I'm
Pearl
curious.
Guy has to smack at him a little
it's
bit.
It's true. It's true. I already know what the favorite scripting language is going to be at the end of the show.
I take that.
So I'm curious now, given that there's not a company behind this, I thought actually this was sort of a product of a company, but you're saying no, there's just an association. So who decides what's on the roadmap? I mean, how do you figure out where you're headed? How did you even figure out to go from Typo 3 to Neos and Flow? What was the impetus for that?
Yes, I mean, that's the community is growing over time. And in earlier times, it was a bit easier. There was something like an expert board, which was somehow guys that were there from the beginning, like Kasper himself. Mm-hmm. they thought about the future and planned ahead and made decisions. Right now, we don't have that board anymore. There were restructurings, and currently the decision making is on the teams. So we have three teams for the Tableau 3 CMS, for Flow and for Neos, and each team decides on their own what the roadmap and the next features are. But actually, the association and the community management, of course, gets into it and asks companies for their interests and what they need for the system. And so that also, of course, gets in somehow. But the decision is on the team, so the developers in the end.
And obviously, you said you have some overlap between the people who are actually contributing to it and the people who are using it the most. So obviously, that's going to have some influence too. I mean, if I'm a big company and I'm using Tableau 3 as my my production system, and I've also got developers that are building specific features for my particular website, and that gets contributed back to the project, that obviously drives the direction of the project, right?
Of course, yes, of course. I mean, that happens quite a lot. We had in the past major changes or features that came from specific customer projects that were happy to release those features back to the system, which of course is a great way, especially in a system where the development is not funded from a company. So every feature that goes in has to come from somewhere. So this is an example for exactly the file management that we talked about, which came to Tableau 3 CMS based on requests from a German ministry that wanted to use Tableau 3, but exactly the file management was an issue for them. So they decided to fund the creation of a new file or asset management for Tableau 3, basically.
And how would this be usable for things like, I'm thinking in the U.S., I don't know if you have the equivalent in Europe, but in the U.S. we have very strict restrictions on, say, health information, that health information is only available to the actual client and certain other restricted people. Would Tableau 3 be compliant with these sorts of laws, or would we have to look to something more custom for that?
No, I think that would be possible. I mean, we have all kinds of security add-ons. We have, of course, everything is encrypted by default, but also there are add-ons for any major system. We can connect to LDAP or something like that if you need your authentication coming from that. And as I said, there are ministry websites built with that which have some of those issues as well and need to take care about security and information disclosure. So I think that could work out.
So also, I'm curious. I know that the moment you choose, I'm gonna pick on them because I don't like them very much, but the moment you pick Oracle as a database, you automatically have to hire at least one full-time DBA. There's just no way around it because it's just so complex to manage and maintain. Is Tableau 3 in that league? You said you didn't want to use it for small sites, but do you need somebody that's like full-time babysitting this thing?
Definitely not for smaller sites. I guess for a bigger website, it can make sense to have someone responsible that knows at least a bit about Tableau 3. Let's say mm-hmm. an administrator. I mean, he doesn't need to know how to create a new website, but at least he needs to know what the system is based on and a bit of MySQL and PHP configuration background. It is certainly helpful in a bigger environment, but I guess every bigger company working with the CMS will have someone in technical in-house that has at least some idea about the system. But Tableau 3 is also used a lot for small to medium companies, and those usually don't have in-house technicians, just editors.
And what's the relationship like between the people that are providing the content and the people who are sort of designing the site? Like I have horrible design skills, so I'm always happy to go to other people's websites because they have better looking sites than I do. Because I'm a content guy, I'm much more interested in what the words are on the page, not on the actual layout. Are there good interfaces for people to have, like, you know, make it pretty, I guess is the right way to say it?
Yes, absolutely. I mean, that's the main reason why Tableau 3 was created. To separate the design from the content. So Tableau 3 is is very flexible in the output. You can configure it down to the HTML single tag or single character level, even how your output should look like. So there's no problem for any designer to design something for Type 3. I mean, there are no restrictions they need to take care of. Everything you can do with a static website, you can do with the Type 3 CMS as well. And if you put enough effort in it, I mean, depending on what kind of content or crazy structures you build, as a designer, it might take some time to create something usable for an editor. I mean, it should be as easy as possible for the editor to use those layouts. But it is possible with Type 3.
And you can have breadcrumbs and stuff, or you know, like show you where you are on the site and have menus that automatically populate based on new content being uploaded?
Yes, absolutely. I mean, Type 3 is one of the features that is very specific to Type 3 and also very complicated to learn. In the beginning, Type 3 has a small... It's not really a scripting language. It's more like a description language about the content. It's a declarative kind of thing. Looks like a configuration file a bit with nesting. And this is the main. It's called TypeScript, and this is the main thing for configuring your output. You use templates for the bigger stuff, but for details, you can use this language, and it enables you to create breadcrumbs and menus of all kinds and language dropdowns and whatever you imagine, teasers of content, whatever comes to your mind. You probably can do it with TypeScript in some way or the other, unless you want to do complex database requests and stuff like that. Then you need a plugin at some point.
And scalability. So this is standard PHP and MySQL or some other database behind it. Do I just scale that the same way I would scale any other website?
Usually you would, yes. I mean, there are some pretty crazy setups for Type 3, and you can use different kinds of databases. You don't need to use MySQL. You could use some like Postgre or Oracle as well, if need be. MySQL is just the best working or the best tested, let's say. We support different caching backends if you need more speed, so you can drop your caches to something like Redis or other data stores, memcached. So that makes it pretty scalable in the end.
So I had a couple of questions. I think some of the folks on the OpenShift team will shoot me if I don't ask. Have you tested Type 3 out on any of the past systems like OpenShift? Are there cartridges to run it on things like that, since you're talking about scalability anyway?
Yes. You got me at that point, actually, because I didn't try it with Type 3 CMS, and I have no experience with Type 3 CMS on such systems. I did some tests with Flow and Neos, which work pretty well. It depends on the environment. There are some environments that are more difficult than others, but in general, it's pretty nicely working on such environments, especially as in Flow and Neos, we now use Composer, which is a dependency management tool for PHP, which is kind of something that is in other languages a default since years, but Type 3 never, or PHP never had such a tool. And so deployment is getting much easier with Flow and Neos. For Type 3 CMS, I would have to test it. I guess it should work. I don't see any problems, but I have no experience with that.
Okay. And I also wanted to, whenever I talk to open source developers who are deeply embedded in any project, I also kind of like to talk to them about what are they interested in outside of that project? Like, are there other open source projects you're really interested in, or any trends in the industry that you're really interested in right now? New languages, like, are you excited about Go or anything like that? I'm just curious, because usually when you find people who are working on one system, they know quite a bit about other things that maybe they don't get asked about.
True. I like open source software a lot and different languages. The problem is if you're so involved in one project, it's difficult to find time to check other projects really deeply. I invested some time also because we use it in Neos with the Ember.js JavaScript framework, which I like a lot. I don't know if you've heard of it. It's probably the competitor to Angular.js.
I've heard of it, but I know next to nothing about it.
Okay, it's a JavaScript MVC framework for web applications, for client-side web applications. And it's pretty neat. The concepts are very nice. And we started to use it for Neos while it was still in alpha, actually, and adapted up until now to the final version. And we are pretty happy with it. We got in touch with their team and have met them. And it's a very nice system. So I've worked with that a bit. And actually, since last year, since meeting quite some Python guys, I would really like to get into Python more because everyone of the Python community I met was really nice. You can say that for many open source projects, but somehow it was amazingly friendly and welcoming, the people I met from Python. So I definitely want to check that out. I did some first intros last weekend, but I haven't been deeply into it yet. But it's very interesting to me. And I probably want to check out Go next. It's interesting. I've seen some examples, and some other people in our team have used it for smaller projects. It looks very interesting, and it might be nice for faster server-side stuff to accompany Type 3 and Type 3 Neos. So that's also something I definitely want to get a deeper look at. And for me, I'm currently also looking into other databases, like, of course, NoSQL databases, CouchDB and MongoDB, but also graph databases, because we have something structure-wise in Type 3 Neos that would be best for a graph database. So I'm checking currently how we could connect to such a system, a graph database, for storing the content of Type 3 Neos.
I think you just listed about half of our past guests on Floss Weekly. That's a nice answer there. I'm actually directly curious about Ember because I'm working on a project right now using Angular Dart, which is based on Angular mm-hmm. JavaScript. And what did you choose Ember? Was it already part of the project?
No. I was part of the. I mean, we choose it like four or five guys together in our project. Mm-hmm. The thing is, I was part of the of most of the Neos development, and we started to create the user interface for it with XJS. Which mm-hmm. is a pretty component-based framework and library. And it started out pretty well. But at some point with XJS, you find a spot where the components work nicely together, but you cannot change them in a way you would like, because then it gets really complicated and you basically have to rewrite all the code. And so we got stuck. We had the user interface in some state and worked on it, and the work actually became slower and slower. We were at a point where we took like 3 weeks for just changing an animation to how we would like to have it, and that was the point that we saw that won't work out. I mean, we have already something, but to move forward, we need to change something, and it was really a hard decision, but we came to the conclusion to drop XJS and restart the backend development from scratch. And we looked at different projects, and at that time it was still called Sproutcore 2. And we met for this decision over a weekend. It was a developer event for Type 3. and we hacked together a new backend prototype in like 2 nights. And so that was very exciting, and we loved the way it worked and how fast we could go forward. So at that point, the decision was clear for us that we should use it, and we didn't have any problems so far with it. We really like the system. It works very well for us, and it just fills our needs.
And the API between your front end and your back end, then, is that published? Is that something that people can also talk to directly and do updates and stuff with that?
Yes, absolutely. Currently, it's like we don't document it, because we say we might still change minor details in it, because it's just the first version of the API. But the idea is, as soon as we are happy enough with the API, to release it as a documented API, so you could drop the front end and just do iOS application or whatever you need for your client to work with the CMS.
Wow, cool. And what is it like working with Ember? What is your typical workflow? I mean, you're still writing directly in JavaScript, correct?
Yes, absolutely. I mean, it's JavaScript. It's a JavaScript framework. The thing about Ember is that you have this data binding, which Angular has as well, but Angular mostly relies on the annotation or the data attributes in the markup. Mm-hmm. And that's something we didn't want so much, because we actually NEOS editing works in the website itself. So we use content editable, which is around in the HTML standard since ages, basically, but was never used for CMSs, even though it's obvious to use it for such things. And so in NEOS, you can actually edit the content directly on the website. When you're logged in, you get some toolbars, and you just click in your website and edit right away. You have your style sheets, your design, so you see what you get in the end. And for that, we needed a JavaScript framework that can do a lot, that is flexible and very dynamic, but at the same time doesn't influence the markup too much.
So that means I can edit it both as sort of a what you see is what you get editor, a WYSIWYG editor, but also I can also edit angle bracket stuff if I wanted to, right?
Right, yes.
Oh, very cool.
Angle
very
bracket
cool.
Stuff is the technical term.
Exactly. Yes. You know, those things.
That's the perfect. Things. Yeah, the thing.
The
yeah.
Things. Yeah. Angle bracket stuff. It's what the web is made of.
Yes. You yes, cut the web thing open. The web is made.
Yeah.
I'm not sure if this is appropriate for the show, but you saw the thing about, 10% of the U.S. population thinks that HTML is a disease of a sort?
Oh, God, no. I did not see that.
Yeah. Yeah. A specifically type of transmissionable disease, which just lends itself to all sorts of things. Like, I've had HTML since 1995, things like that, yeah.
That's a little
okay,
crazy.
But it's transferable over the web, probably. That makes it very dangerous.
It is. It's very dangerous.
It's in everybody's house right now.
Yeah, that's scary.
It's in some people's pockets, really.
Really? Yeah.
I think we're getting distracted here. We're almost out of time. Is there anything I haven't asked you that you want to make sure our audience is aware of?
Let me think about it. Well, actually, I'm very happy to be here. And as you said, you have not heard about Type of 3, which is not that amazing, let's say. I mean, especially in the US, Drupal is the major thing for CMS. And WordPress, obviously, everyone knows WordPress and uses WordPress. I think for me, it's interesting to encourage people to try Type 3 and also Type 3 NEOS. Just check it out. I mean, it's still PHP. I know there are some bad words about PHP out there, but they are nice projects. And we would like to get out of Europe with it. Let's say, I mean, we have a very big community in Europe and do lots of stuff in Europe, but outside of it, we are not that well known. And I think, not exactly because it's too bad, but just because we don't get the word out.
Oh, and you also mentioned you had some sort of developer weekend or something like that. Is this, you have like ongoing, meetups about this?
Yes, absolutely. We have, the teams regularly meet for hacking together. We have lots of events, mostly in Europe, I have to admit. We have usually one conference in the US every year, which I actually don't know a date yet for this year. I don't know when it will happen this year. But we have a conference and a developer event in Europe usually, and bar camps also in Europe everywhere. So there's almost any weekend some type of three event somewhere.
Awesome. Okay, well, I have two final questions I have to ask you, or my audience will write in and say, why didn't you ask him those questions? So what's your favorite scripting language?
My favorite scripting language? Well, as I'm doing PHP so long, I hate and love it somehow. I would say by now, working with a nice framework, I would almost favor JavaScript because it has some interesting, nice features. But my main work is in PHP, definitely, and I like doing PHP work. So it's JavaScript with PHP in the front row somehow.
That's a totally fair answer for that one. Yes, it's not the answer I want, of course, but it's the answer. It's fair. One for your column there, all right. Yes.
The thing is, we in the team working on Flow and Neos, there was some discussion, should we change the language for the new system? We had a chance. I mean, we were building from scratch, so why not change the language? But for an open source community, having a new product is already pretty difficult. I mean, we are now in the transition phase where people try Neos and see if they can use it for their projects. And if we had changed the language, I think we would have lost lots of the community. So it was not something we choose because we wanted to have PHP as language, but because it was there from the beginning and the community knew PHP. So for myself, I'm so deeply into the project that I don't want to leave the project because of the language, let's say. So for myself, I probably would like to check Python or Ruby, but the project is PHP, so I have to put up with that, but it works.
And my other favorite stock question is, well, my favorite, it's not favorite stock question. It's my other question I always ask everybody is, what's your favorite text editor?
My favorite text editor. I'm a vagabond. I use whatever text editor comes around. it's really like that. I'm not the Vim guy or the, I don't know. It's just not like that. I mean, somehow in, there's actually a time in my life where I said I don't want to become a programmer, never in my life. And now I'm a programmer and do a lot of programming. So I was not the editor guy for a long, long time. For my work, I mainly use PHP Storm, which is the equivalent to IntelliJ. But for basic editing, I have Sublime Text around, but I don't like it that much. I use whatever comes around, really. It's just like that.
I like that answer. That's probably the most flexible answer we've gotten out of any of our guests so far. So I tell you what, Christian, it's been absolutely wonderful having you on the show. I know a lot of people now know a lot more about Typo3 and might want to go check it out. So thank you for being on the show.
Thank you for inviting me.
Very cool. That was Christian Miller, who is representing Typo3 to us. So what do you think, Zonker?
I have to think any developer who doesn't have a preference of text editor must be running for something. That was way too diplomatic an answer.
Absolutely. No.
Actually, I found it really fascinating. I haven't used, Typo3 myself, and I think, my CMS choosing days may be, if not behind me, at least, I won't be doing that in the near future. Otherwise, I'd be very tempted to give it a test drive. So I learned a lot listening to him.
Yeah. This is really cool. I mean, and CMSs are one of those things that it's just, it's kind of like a database. You need it when you need it. And you pick one that sort of, maybe people are familiar with or maybe is compatible with more things that you want to develop with or whatever. But But I kind of like it. It sounds like they got the right attitude about this thing, and it's been around for a long time. And the new project sounds amazing, too, with a nice API, so you can actually build to it from other devices and stuff. And the fact that they're using a modern framework like Ember.js, like I said in the interview, I said, you know, that I'm looking at Angular Dart, which is the Dart version of Angular.js, which I've been finding to be quite amazing. I just, in text, you just put, they call them mustache handles, and it binds it to a variable immediately. So you change that variable in your code, and the variable just changes on the page. It's too simple. When it's that simple to write single page applications, you know, we're going to get a lot more smart stuff happening out front. So I'm looking forward to doing more stuff with that.
Yeah, that sounded pretty interesting to me as well. I also, you know, it's interesting the number of developers you talk to when we bring up the license question that are not as religious about it. I mean, that used to be a very contentious question, right? And these days it's a much more, that's the license we're using, without a lot of opinion about it, which I found kind of interesting.
Yeah, and especially when his answer was like, well, it's GPL, but you know, I would have preferred like the MIT license, which I can relate to that simply because I know from having talked to many, many project leaders and many, many people at open source conferences all over the world that that the more liberal licenses like the MIT or the BSD licenses allow the project to be used in a lot more places because there are definitely companies that cannot handle the GPL. And now all the, you know, Free Software Foundation card carrying members are going to be emailing me. I know that, but I'm just being practical here. You know, the freer licenses allow things to be used in more places. It's just the way it works.
Yeah, as a CMS for a company, for a lot of companies, unless they're actually delivering something or it's a GPL something, I don't think that license makes a huge difference because they're not deploying it to anybody. But for other tools, for example, I used to work on CloudStack, and for something like that, that made a huge difference. We saw that community saw a huge influx of people when they chose Apache over GPL v3, because there were a lot of companies that just wouldn't touch GPL v3 with a 10-foot pole.
Yeah, I understand entirely. So that was a good show, fun. We have some good shows coming up. Only a few people actually booked already, but I am now sending out all of my Q2 requests. Q2, second quarter, right, Q2. Oh, man, I'm not awake yet. Okay, so next week we do have GNU Health, which is a full hospital clinic management system. For medical records, for billing, for insurance, all sorts of things, doctor records, things like that. And coming up after that is CoreOS, CoreOS maybe. It's Linux for massive server deployments. We just added to the schedule C-File, S, not the letter C, S-C-A-F-I-L-E, C-File. It's bills itself as next generation open source cloud storage. Why is nothing ever current generation? It's always next generation. Anyway, next generation open source cloud storage. We still have a lot of open slots in Q2. We're going to be filling them all over the next few weeks. You can watch my progress at doing that by going to twit.tv/floss, which is the homepage for this show. And you can go from there directly to our big Google spreadsheet that links all the current shows and all the shows that are upcoming and gives the full schedule. We also post to Google Plus at Floss Weekly, the full name there. We also have a Twitter handle, Floss Weekly, all one word. We do have a live chat room. We occasionally take people from the chat. We don't take people from the chat room. We take questions from the chat room. The people stay in the chat room. And so we have our show live at live.twit.tv. It's at 8:30 a.m. Pacific times typically, or you can go to the spreadsheet and figure out when it's actually going to happen. You can also follow me at Merlyn, M-E-R-L-Y-N, on Twitter. But more likely, you'll see me on Google Plus, Randall L. Schwartz on Google Plus. And I don't have anything really to plug right now. It's just really odd. Usually I'm on my way to someplace and going. And then we will go ahead and this is usually Tom Zonker when we ask our co-host, do you have anything to plug today?
Actually, yeah, I have a couple of things. So putting on my Apache hat very briefly, I'll be at ApacheCon in Denver. So that's coming up. We're running several CentOS dojos, one in Lyon, France, one in Santa Clara, along with the Percona Live MySQL conference, and then another one. The first day of the CloudStack collaboration conference in Denver, we're running a CentOS dojo there. And of course, I would be remiss not to mention Red Hat Summit. other than that, just follow me on Twitter. I'd love to talk to people there. My handle is just at JZB. And you can also follow my team on at Red Hat Open.
Very cool. Very cool. All right. Anything else?
No, I just saw the message that somebody's feed might be frozen, so I didn't know if you were ready to come back there.
Well, I don't know what's happening on the video right now, but I guess our voices are going out, but I only see my face frozen in time. So I have no idea if the video is still working on this show, but I will just pretend it is, and we'll see you all again next week on Floss Weekly.